Yeah, who the hottest out? Boy, it gotta be Quay. Had my city going crazy from a whole nother state. It's amazing how the doubters can continue to hate. They wonder how the kid be shining when they throwing the shade. When it come to competition, we can never equate. I hold myself to higher standards so you couldn't relate. And if you call yourself a critic and you bumping this tape, make sure you qualified to speak on what it is to be great. Now hold up, I cannot compete with locals. I would never change the motive. I got dreams of being global, I'm destined to be a mogul. Rolling like a locomotive, they can't find a diagnosis. Sickest nigga flowing, so I got them wondering who wrote it. What's up?
What's good with it, everybody? We back again for another episode of the Pick and Roll Podcast. Sam, what's up?
What's good? What up, world?
I know you've been itching for this episode, man. We got a lot to talk about, and I guess we'll go ahead and start it off the right way, man. The Portland Trail Blazers just pretty much handled the Oklahoma City Thunder, man. And it's, to some people, it's surprising. To others, it's not. What's your whole take on this, man? Like, what did you make of that whole series?
Well, I'm one of those people that was surprised. As I said on here multiple times, I thought that this year the Thunder was going to be a real problem. I thought they were going to be a problem in the playoffs, flat out. But once again, we did. You did actually say when we talked about the Thunder once on here that you felt like, because remember we had the topic, you said, has Russell Westbrook finally figured out how to.
Right.
And you said when the high leverage moments come, he's going to go back to being who he normally is or whatever. But it's, I can't sit here and blame it all on Russ, even though I do got a lot to say about him, and I'll get into that after we hear from you a little bit. But Paul George was nowhere to be found. They let Enes Kanter come in. He used to come off the bench for them. He let them terrorize them guys all series. I mean, they just flat out didn't look good. I Billy Donovan, I feel like he needs to lose his gig. I mean, yeah, what can you really say good about them right now, for real?
I mean, this is a team that we talked about prior to playoffs. We talked about whether or not it would be a problem for them limping into the playoffs. And it appeared to be that way. They were one of the teams that we touched on amongst others who were limping into the playoffs. And I'm not going to lie, I'm surprised a bit as well. I thought that this may have been the series that they get past, and then next round they actually, you know, start to take a step back and show us who they really are. But as far as this series, man, it's – like you said, it's weird to see a guy like Enes Kanter pretty much be as dominant as he was. Excuse me, that's not to shade him at all, because he's a really good basketball player. He displayed that while he was with the Thunder, also displayed it when he was with the Knicks. So I felt like that was a solid pickup for them. But the way that he looked out there just looked as if he was a lot better than what he really is. Now, another thing that I don't feel like people are talking about enough is that this last game that they just had, that the Trailblazers were able to pull out, the Thunder had a sizable lead. Like, they pretty much got dog walked. Like, they
were up 15 with 6 minutes to go.
Exactly. And they got walked down. People aren't putting enough emphasis on that. Now, that to me, like you said, Billy Donovan, I think it's time. He's got to go. He's had ample opportunity to show what he's capable of. And I mean, me and you talked about it earlier, but the major takeaway from this is that since Billy Donovan has gotten there, since Kevin Durant has not gotten there, they have not won a road playoff game. That is super alarming to me as a head coach. And
I do you one better. They haven't won back-to-back playoff games since KD left.
Oh, man. See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
That they haven't won back-to-back crazy playoff games. That's, I mean, that's ridiculous. And that is something that, you know, you got to speak about when it comes to the players. and something that you've also got to speak about when it comes to the coaching staff. Like, that, if that's not enough proof to show you that this man needs to go, I don't know what is. Now, that the fact that they got walked down the way that they did, that, yeah, that goes into coaching. But at a point in time as a player, that's when it's got to kick in. Like, all right, man, I'm not about to let us lose this game. Somebody has to be that guy to where they're like, nah. Because, I mean, if we really want to be honest, down the stretch, it was nobody but C.J. McCollum and Dame Lillard, the two people that you would expect to lead them down the stretch, doing what they did. And as a coach, that's what you prepare for. You prepare to try to limit those guys, which they were unable to do. But as a player, like a guy like Paul George, a guy like Russell Westbrook, a guy like Dennis Schroeder, who are defenders or pride themselves in being good defenders, they just pretty much let those guys do what they wanted. Now, granted, great NBA players or great scorers in the NBA, they're going to get their buckets, but it's your job to make it tough on them. And not only that, you've got to find a way to score in between them scoring. It's not like a 15-point lead should not be easy to walk down, especially not in the playoffs. Like, I don't understand that. That's ridiculous to me. But
especially when you got a point guard that's supposedly the caliber of a point guard that Russell Westbrook is supposed to be.
Exactly.
It's like he's just so stubborn. It's sad. Now, granted, it wasn't all him down that point lead, but I was always taught that when the team not getting in their stuff, that's the point guard's fault.
Exactly.
That's how I came up. I always got in trouble if we ain't run the offense. If I threw it in and Hale threw up some crazy shot and we were supposed to be running some shit,
you was getting blamed for it.
Yeah. They ain't pull Hale to the side. They pulling me to the side. Hey, you got to get us in the off. You got to run our stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's how I always thought it was, is that when the team not running the offense, that falls on the point guard. Just like if the football team not running the right plays and running the right routes, that's the quarterback's
definitely getting blamed.
Yeah, so I mean, Russ got to take it. He's got to learn. I'm tired of saying he got to learn. This is who he is. He's not learning anything. This is Russell Westbrook, man. What we seen yesterday and what we have seen over the past couple years after KD left is who Russell Westbrook is. Now, let me run down some of these stats that I got over here.
Yeah, please do that, because I got something run down as well.
Since Game 5 of the 2016 Western Conference Finals, which was while KD was still there, when they were up 3-1 against the Warriors, Russell Westbrook is averaging 29.2 points, 10.3 rebounds, and 9.4 assists. So, I mean, the numbers are there. But then here's where the shit gets crazy. He's 38.4% from the field and 30.1% from the three-point line, and they're 4-14 in those games. So, I mean, yeah, on paper, the numbers look great, but it's clearly his efficiency. It hurts the team. Like, I don't understand how people watch – the Thunder play on a regular basis, and you can sit here and tell me that the way Russ plays on offense helps them. I don't care about the assists. Like, the field goal, you can't win with your point guard shooting 38% from the field if he's
going to taking as many shots as he takes.
He's going to shoot 30 times and shoot 38% from the field.
You can count on a loss.
So, now listen to this. Elimination game losses in his career, he's 11 for 28, 4 for 20, 8 for 23, 7 for 21, 15 for 34, 18 for 43, and then from last night, 11 for 31. It's just terrible.
Nothing above 50% or even remotely close.
There's no way to slice it. It's terrible. And as we touched on 2 weeks ago when we talked about the underrated and overrated poll, it's not his ability that has him overrated. It's the shots that he takes. It's hard to watch. I was talking to your cousin earlier on Facebook, Brandon, about, because you know he loves him some rest.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, bro, he's got to be the most inefficient superstar ever. Like, I can't think of a guy that we consider a superstar to ever be this inefficient. I just can't think of one. And I can't think of a player who couldn't shoot that insisted on shooting as many threes as he shoots. Like, it's like, this, it's almost, it's close to watching a guy like Rondo just chuck threes all day. Like, this is almost like if when Rondo couldn't shoot, if he just stood out there and was like, shit, you gonna have to guard me still. I'm gonna hit a couple of them.
Like, right.
He's out there just chucking them, shooting 9, 10, 11 threes in a game. There's no reason for it, especially when he can get to the rim as easy as he can. It just doesn't make sense to me. I'd just be baffled.
Now, my biggest takeaway from all of that stuff that you named is that even with all of that stuff that you named, there are still people out here that can't wrap their head around why Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City. If these stats don't prove to y'all why he left, then I don't know what is. You're just a flat-out KD hater if you believe that this had nothing to do with it or this wasn't the reason why he left. People that play with guys like this, they saw this. He saw this way before we did. You better believe he did. I'm pretty sure in the meetings with the coaches and the post-game meetings, all of the stuff that they had, I guarantee as a head coach or somebody on that staff is bringing this stuff up. They're bringing up these statistics. Russ, you know, tonight you shot such and such and such shots from the field. You took this many amount of shots. We need you to be more efficient, or we need you to get the team more involved. Like, I don't understand. I think people are too. This is exactly why I don't put as much praise on triple doubles as most other people do. Triple doubles are cool. It's a nice statistic to have, but you see stuff like this that makes you believe, that makes you feel like, damn, that stuff really don't matter that much, because everything that went on last night, as much as people like to hype, oh, Russ had a triple-double, you don't see any of that. He had a triple-double last night. You don't see any of that on any blogs, on any websites, on any columns. You don't see that anywhere because it didn't matter. Russ had 29 points last night and shot the ball 31 times. Like, what in the world? What are you doing? Like you said, it's not all on him, but a lot of the blame is on him, man. You got a guy on Paul George who had 36 last night. He shot 14 for 20 from the field. He only missed 6 shots the whole night. Like, I don't – as a point guard, if you see that a guy's locked in like that, it's your job to make sure that he's getting the ball where he needs it. Crunch time more than any time. When you see that it's getting down to the nitty gritty and we up 15, oh, now we up 10, oh, now we up 5, we have to find this guy at all costs. Get him the ball where he's comfortable. Let's start getting stuff moving. Like, it's not – and the thing that upsets me the most is that this isn't a Portland Trailblazers team that's equipped defensively. They're not looked at as a team that is going to go out there and lock you up. They've got some guys that play pretty good defense. But for the most part, when you think of Portland, you think of the backcourt. Like, it's simple as that. And this is, it's really crazy because we talked about this, what, like a couple episodes ago, on whether or not the fact that Nurkic wasn't there, would that be dampening to them? Would it hurt them any? I plumb forgot he got hurt. Like, I'm thinking the whole time, like, I don't think I seen Nurkic in here. I don't think I seen him all game. I don't think I saw him last game either. Then I started thinking, I'm like, oh, he did get hurt. That should not be as non-noticeable as it is against a team like OKC. Ennis Kanter is he's a good basketball player. But he's a good offensive basketball player. He's not an elite rim protector, and they don't have one. With Nurkic not being in there, it should be much more noticeable that they're missing their starting center, and you can't tell. You couldn't tell this last series. And that, I just don't get it, man. I really don't understand. This is not
– Russ should have been having dunks and layups
the entire game. The entire series, and definitely last night. You know you on the brink of getting closed out. Why are you out there shooting 11 threes, more threes than anybody else on your roster? Like, hold on, let me tally this up, man. You shot the same amount of threes as your starters combined.
And you one of the worst shooters in the league statistically.
4 for 11 from three. Paul George only shot 8. Jeremy Grant shot 2, went 2 for 2. And Terrence Ferguson shot 1. So tally that up. Exactly. Tally that up. That's 11 total threes. 11 total threes from your starters, and you shoot 11 by yourself, as bad as you shoot from three. And not even as bad as you shoot, as bad as you've been shooting. And to me, this is what I definitely want to talk about. I think he got too much caught up into the Dame Lillard versus Russell Westbrook.
That was my next point too.
And
yes.
That to me, you cannot do that as a point guard.
I can't do that as a player, period.
Exactly. I understand you want to have your duels. I understand you're going to put that chip on your shoulder. But if winning is the ultimate goal, all that stuff goes out the window. And that, to me, leads me to ask this question. Any Russell Westbrook fan out there, how important do you believe that winning is to Russell Westbrook? Because I've said this on multiple occasions. He can go in front of the media and say he don't care about his stats. All he cares about is the dub at the end of the day. Bullshit. I'm calling bullshit, because as much as I watch him year after year after year, I find his words and his actions aren't adding up. They don't match at all.
The only part of it that does is that he plays hard. So that makes you think he wants to win. But when you start thinking about what all his team actually needs him to do for them to be successful, and how he really literally refuses to do that shit, it does kind of make you question how much does he really want to win.
I don't think Russ wants to win. I think Russ wants to be successful. Whether that be him winning, whether that be him winning the MVP, whether that mean he gets the recognition that he believes he deserves. I think at the end of the day, yes, it would be cool to Russ for winning a ring, but I don't think that it would hurt him if he were to end his career and be like, damn, I ain't win a ring. Like, what the fuck? I think he'll look at the end of the day like, shit, I got a whole bunch of accolades. If you could give Russ the opportunity to either win a ring or go down as the leading, have the most points out of anybody in NBA history to pass up Kareem, I bet you he would take that. Like
the points.
Yes, he would take the points.
Yeah,
he would take many accolades over winning an NBA championship. And to me, I don't get it.
I think it's got to be a balance. Of course, you're going to want to have individual success, but individual success don't really come without having team success.
Fact.
So, like, I mean, I don't think that guys should put everything, like all of, like, I don't think you should put base your whole view of being successful on winning the title.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it should be like that, but I do feel like
a player
should be the main goal,
right? And
once
I feel
you
like
get
a,
to the league, that should be the main goal,
exactly. But I feel like a player of his caliber, a player that's been through what he's been through, that should be the ultimate goal at this point of his career. You've already proved you've won an MVP. You've already proved you can carry a team without Kevin Durant. You've already proved that you're a superstar. You've already proved that you're one of the best players in the NBA. What more can you prove individually besides the fact that you're inefficient shooting?
Raising more questions now.
Exactly. Now you're starting to – now people are starting to look at you in a completely different light. A few months ago when he was doing all this triple-double stuff, everybody was, Russ doing this, Russ doing that. I've never been high on Russell Westbrook in his triple-doubles. I don't care about that. I don't care at all. Everybody running around talking about Russ got triple-doubles. Russ did this. Russ averaged a triple-double for his entire season. That shit crazy. He's doing it for multiple seasons. That's cool. All of that's cool. That's fine. But I don't care about none of that. I want to see what Russell Westbrook is going to get better at year in, year out. And I'm not seeing it. I don't see improvements. Russell Westbrook, to me, isn't necessarily any better than he has been in the past. He's just got more of an opportunity to show what he's capable of. The same Russell Westbrook that we see today, that we saw last year, is the same exact Russell Westbrook that we saw when they went to the NBA Finals with Kevin Durant. Like, he's the same exact player. He just has more of a spotlight on him now. That's all it is. That's the only difference to me.
Stats will back that up too. If you go look at him, I mean, his shooting percentages are pretty even across the board every year, about the same. About 40% from the field, about 28-32% from three, and probably about 70% from the free throw line.
Shit is ridiculous.
The points per game change, of course, but I mean, his shooting percentages are pretty consistent.
Yeah. Now, was there more that you wanted to touch on with the Dame versus Russ?
Nah, besides the fact that the reason why Dame was the more successful player in this series is because he let the game come to him and he was more humble. Like, every time Russell Westbrook scored, he was acting like he hit the game winner.
Yeah, doing a little baby joint when he was every scoring time, over Dame Lillard, you know, and all of that. Like,
Dame just scoring and getting back. Like, Dame recognized that it was a marathon, and Russ was treating it like every play was the play that's deciding the game. Like, he was beating his chest every time. Like, bro, you just missed seven in a row. Like, chill out, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he just – I don't know. Russ got too caught up into that one-on-one, and I feel like ultimately that's the reason why he wasn't successful. He didn't play within the team.
It brings you to ask, like you said, I mean, we may be looking at what we're going to get from Russell Westbrook. But a player, like I said on last episode, a player of his caliber has no excuse for not getting better in aspects that you need to. And it just makes you think, like, all of these people that really value Russell Westbrook or hold him, like, above so many other players, it's like you love him so much. But I can't really understand what you love about him outside of the fact that he's got that aggression and that he's got that I'm going to attack anybody that's guarding me. He does not approach the game from a standpoint to where he wants to be the greatest. And for him to be as cocky as he is, you would think that he would want to be. But it's just crazy, man. You see him summer in and summer out. Out there at what is that called? The Black Op or whatever it's called, whatever that place is called, where they go to work out, him, Melo, and all of that. Well, he keep doing it, he's going to end up just like Melo, out of the NBA with no ring in some years to come. He's going to be looking back like, damn, I should have did it differently. And, I mean, it's crazy to me. Like, how much more do you have to go through in order for you to realize, okay, what I'm doing is not helping my team. It's time for me to switch gears and figure out a different way to be effective in the NBA. That's what all great players do. Once you find out that what you're doing exceptionally well is not working or is not helping your team, that's when you switch gears and become a different type of player. And I don't want to say all superstars do this, but all great superstars do this. I mean, we've seen people who have scoring talents like a Russell Westbrook that do not alter their game. And, I mean, it is what it is. They go down as – once it's all said and done, they go down as a great, but they're not – they don't go down as one of those guys that we like, yeah, he in the GOAT conversation, or he might have been the best player at his position ever. Like, right now, Russ – Russ is – he's down the line with me as far as where he would rank on the all-time point guard list. He's got a – like, he's got a busload of people in front of him, which is crazy to say because a lot of the guys that I will put ahead of him don't have MVPs. A lot of the guys that I will put ahead of him don't have rings just like him, so we can't go with the accolades and we can't go with the statistics. They're just flat out better than Russell Westbrook because of the way that they approach the game. Simple as that. And it pains me to say this, but in years to come, once we're old and gray, kids is going to look back at Russell Westbrook's stats like, Russell Westbrook was a dog. He was this, he was that, without having to watch what we've had to watch in these massacres of him missing damn near everything that he attempts. Like, this shit is ridiculous, man. But I think I've given enough energy to the Thunder and to Russell Westbrook. And like I've said, people have heard me on multiple episodes. I'm not the type of guy that just flat out hates Russell Westbrook. I've never done that. At one point in time, I loved Russell Westbrook. He was one of my favorite point guards in the league. But the more I started to watch him, the more I started to dislike him because of what I saw from, you know, like what we saw last night. But anyway, man, let's move forward. Right now, as we're recording, the Rockets are playing against the Jazz. Seems to be that the Rockets will be moving forward and winning this game if they can pull everything together and finish it the way that they're supposed to. The Rockets will be facing off with the Warriors next round. Now, to me, this is probably, I'll say this and one other matchup are the two matchups that I'm probably most anxious to watch, like, including the NBA Finals. I think that this Warriors-Rockets matchup has the potential to be what we will expect to see in the NBA Finals this year. Preview it a little bit, man. Let's talk about this. Warriors and Rockets. Obviously, the Warriors have home court advantage. Can the Rockets take a step this year and become who they were last year, or excuse me, be better than they were last year to take a step and beat the Warriors? What would the Rockets have to do in order to make that happen this year?
I don't think their game plan needs to change any. I think they can still do the same thing they did last year. I mean, heavy pick and roll and play good D. I don't think they're going to win, but I think that this Rockets team is better than the one last year, honestly. I really do. I think they lost a little bit last year, but I think they gained some things in different aspects of the game. Like, I like Kenneth Faried with them.
Mm-hmm.
Shumpert.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Rivers. He wasn't with them last year, was he?
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, like they didn't add some key pieces. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm worried because I'm not. But I think that this Rockets team is better than they were last year. Last episode, we had John on, and we talked a little bit about what we thought was going to be the key, which was going to be Boogie Cousins, and if he could handle playing defense in the pick and roll so that he could stay on the floor. But clearly that won't be part of this series. He's out for the playoffs. So now it's going to be about if we're going to be able to keep Andrew Bogut on the floor, because the Warriors' offense is just different with a guy like that out there.
Mm-hmm.
That big dude can pass the rock, man.
He can
pass the rock, man. I miss watching him throw them passes to Steph because he had dropping through his legs and everything. I miss that. I know Steph missed that too. And I hope that he's gonna be able to play, man. That pick and roll is gonna be tough to keep Bogut out there. But he's a decent defender, so we're gonna see. I think this series is gonna be extremely exciting. I can't wait for it. But both teams gotta take care of business tonight. I think if the Rockets don't win tonight, they might be in a little bit of trouble. I don't think they lose, but I think they might go to seven.
It might go Chuck, seven, yeah.
Yeah, Chuck said that before the game, and I was like, yeah, I can agree with that, because they're going to create a monster if the Jazz win today. They're going to have some confidence.
Now, I'm glad you said that, because I didn't really think about it from that perspective, but as soon as you said it, a light bulb went off in my head. This is not a Jazz team that's not familiar with upsets. We saw them do it last year. It was last year, right? Yeah. Last year when Donovan Mitchell pretty much willed them to the upset. I mean, over OKC. So if they win this game, I don't know. It's hard for me. It's 50-50 if I think about it. If the Jazz win tonight and they take this to seven games, they might win this series.
Nah, but see, it's only game five, though.
I know, but if they win game five, they're winning game six.
Yeah, they're going to win game six for sure.
And if they take it to seven, then it's going to be, I'm telling you, all that momentum, it's going to be difficult to beat them boys. It's going to be, and I feel like if it goes to seven, it's going to be some turmoil in that locker room. Because I don't think that they're all on one accord.
See, that's the thing about the NBA playoffs, man. You let a moment get away from you and the whole series could change.
Flips in a heartbeat. I'm telling you. And that will really test the maturation of a team. Because you'll get guys that'll get in that locker room and start pointing fingers. Shit that niggas been wanting to say all season, it's going to start to come out now. Mm-hmm. Shit, James shoot the ball 40 times a game. I just want to get some touches. His ass been shooting terrible the last couple games. Pass the ball. Niggas really going to get in that bag and start talking. You're going to hear some stuff from players that you normally wouldn't hear it from because now backs is against the wall. But I don't think it'll go that far. I think they'll handle business tonight. And with that being said, Warriors-Rockets, I think that in order for the Rockets to overcome last year, they – obviously, Chris Paul is going to have to stay healthy. That, to me, was the biggest thing last year. And number two, Eric Gordon. A player like Eric Gordon has to learn from previous struggles with shooting the ball when it's time. Like, it's fine and good to shoot it once you got James Harden and Chris Paul out there giving buckets. But on a night when they really need you, those moments are going to be extremely critical against a team like the Warriors because you can't have a game where your two stars are scoring but not scoring efficiently and you're hit or miss from three. We need you to be knocked down. Every time you touch that ball and you got an open look, we need it to go down because if Golden State gets them, that's what's going to happen. So you have to match that level of intensity as far as offensive prowess. I don't necessarily think that you have to go out there and try to run with Golden State. You just have to be somewhat efficient, and you can't let those big runs get to you because it's going to happen with Golden State. They're going to go on runs where they just flat out look like the best team in the NBA, which they are. And it's up to you to combat that. We've always been taught, you and I both, throughout high school and earlier than that, basketball is a game of runs. The way to prevent that from being detrimental to your team is to break the runs up. Don't make the runs any larger than they have to be. Any opportunity that you get to bust it down, let's do it. Whether it be free throws, whether it be layups, whatever you have to do to get your team more involved and to stop that other team from pouring it on, that's what you have to do. So I think that will be huge for Houston. But like you said, this is, to me, a better Houston team, especially on paper. You look at a guy like Austin Rivers. He definitely helps you out a lot when it comes to defending guards because of his size. And I don't think Austin Rivers quite – uh-oh, there they go again, James Harden and Jay Crowder. But, yeah, like I said, I think Russell – I got to get him out of my head. Austin Rivers doesn't get enough credit for how skilled he is defensively. He's not like the best defender, but he's a fairly skilled defender. And his basketball IQ also helps him out as well. But I think that picking him up, and like you said, Kenneth Faried is also big for them. But the fact that Boogie won't be playing helps them out a whole bunch because now – Clint Capela is not out of his element. He doesn't have to stretch to the three unless they put Draymond at the five, which I assume that will do at certain times. But as far as the duration of the game, he doesn't have to worry about being away from the basket now. With Boogie, he had to worry about that. And with Boogie, he had to worry about a guy that has some size that was talented as far as scoring the ball low post. He doesn't have to worry about that now. Now that Andrew Bogut or – excuse me, who's the other big? Is it Bell? Looney. Between those two guys, he can hang out in the paint. He can sag off a little bit. He can be more effective and help defense. And I think that that will definitely aid them. But I'm definitely excited for that series. I still think Golden State will pull it out just off of the star power that they have. I don't think guys like Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry are going to allow a loss like Boogie to affect them enough to where they'll lose the series. I think if they lose the series, it will strictly be because the Rockets just outplayed them. And I don't think that that'll happen. I think it'll probably most likely go seven. But I think Golden State will pull that out. I just don't think as many bodies as they have to throw at Kevin Durant, I think this upcoming series will be the series where Kevin Durant really flexes his muscle. Obviously, I think Steph going to do what he does. But there's a lot of, like I said, against the Clippers, there's a lot of mental stuff that was throwing KD off his game. The Patrick Beverley stuff, all that. They don't have players like that to affect KD. KD's going to go out there and beat KD. You got a guy like Kenneth Faried that can defend him a bit, PJ Tucker, but I don't see those guys being enough to stop him. I think he's going to do what he does. And I mean, let's be honest. The guy who doesn't get as much credit as he should, Klay, I don't think that they have anything for Klay. I don't think they have anything at all for Klay. But it'll definitely be extremely important for the Rockets to utilize those guys that they have defensively. Look at a guy like Iman Shumpert. He doesn't play. He hasn't played as much as I expected him to play in this series. I think that that will change next series just because they'll have to throw more bodies at KD or more bodies at Klay. And another thing that I feel like is extremely important for the Houston Rockets is that Chris Paul missed a lot of time during the season. So this is a fairly fresh Chris Paul. He's not a guy that's got a lot of mileage on him as far as the year is concerned. So I think that that should bode well for them. I think he'll have a pretty good series. And if he does, I don't know. I mean, they got a good chance of winning it, but I need
Steph to go crazy this series, man. I'm talking about like not like normal Steph. I need Steph to go crazy this series. I
want like average 30.
I want Steph to flex his muscle. Forget KD. I'm ready for Steph to flex his muscle. I want to see it. I'm ready.
It's time. I mean, we haven't seen him do it since KD got there in the series.
I know. I feel like that's why I'm kind of ready for KD to leave. I ain't gonna say I'm not gonna be mad if he stays, but I'm ready for Steph to get back to having to do more because I feel like he just got complacent knowing he can just chill really and just really just shoot a bunch of threes really. That's all he really be doing now is bullshitting.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think KD gonna leave though. I think KD will stay. I think Klay gone after this year.
Where you think Klay ain't going nowhere, man?
All right. Pick and Roll podcast, y'all heard it here first, man.
Oh, so I guess what you're saying that
I'm not necessarily saying he's going to be a Laker. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I don't think Klay Thompson will be in Golden State next year.
Klay ain't going nowhere, G.
All right. Like I said, I think he won't be there. But let's talk another series, man. This series is probably the series that I'm most anxious to see outside of that Golden State series. Celtics versus the Bucks, man. This is going to be a very good series. I say that because you've got a guy in Giannis who is most likely going to win the MVP against a team in Boston who has a lot of tools or a lot of wing players to throw at him. And I think more than anybody, they've got the bodies to throw at Giannis and not necessarily disrupt him, but just keep him off balance a little bit. They'll make him have to do different things every time a different person defends him. Now, this is a Celtics team that we also talked about limping into the playoffs. I was one that was never worried about this Celtics team. I knew that once playoff time came, they were either going to be fueled by those young guys or be fueled by Kyrie. One of the two was going to happen. I knew they would get it together and figure out what to do to win. A lot of people, like I said, were worried about them in the playoffs and their seeding and how they played in a regular season. And let's just be honest, they're the first team to complete the sweep in the first round. So they came in there, handled business, and did what they had to do. I think this this series is going to be hard on Milwaukee, because you look at a guy like Eric Bledsoe, who had that he had that monkey on his back with everything that Scary Terry did to him last year. And now you're coming into the series facing the same exact team, but you got a completely different monster to deal with now. Not only do you have to deal with Scary Terry, you've got to deal with the guy that's better than Scary Terry as well. So I don't know how he's going to react to being in this position, but I think that that could be extremely detrimental. Along with that, you need a guy like Chris Middleton to be Chris Middleton. And I don't know if I can count on that from Milwaukee. What's your take on this series?
I think that Boston got a real good chance at beating Milwaukee if they can make it tough on Giannis, not as far as making him miss layups and dunks, but just as far as just not letting him get the easy layup, make him have to adjust his shot every time, or do a Euro. Don't give him clear lanes to the bucket. If Boston can do that, which I think they should be able to do, then I think in the long run that takes its toll on Giannis, and ultimately Boston will win the series in 6 or 7 games. But if they let him get a bunch of clear lanes to the bucket, easy dunks and all that, then it's going to be a long series for them. You just can't let him just get to the bucket at will. He's going to get there anyway, but you got to make him, like, change directions or make some type of move or something. You can't just let him just get easy layups.
I think last year boded well for Boston because they got to see a guy like Giannis. So they know what to expect for the most part. Granted, this year's Giannis is a different animal. I think he's a lot better this year than he was last year. But even with that being said, those Boston wings got a feel. They got a taste for what it's like to guard Giannis. So they know pretty much what they have to do. So if in order for Milwaukee to win that series, it's going to have to be much more than Giannis. They are going to have to get everything that they need out of their supporting cast, even Eric Bledsoe. He can't have those moments where Scary Terry has his number, or even Kyrie for that number. It's all right to be outplayed by that guy, by those guys, but you've got to be able to hold your own out there. It got to a point last year where Terry Rozier was in his head, and it started to affect his play, not even necessarily of what Terry Rozier was doing, just the little things, like them asking him about him in the press conference. I don't know who that is. Like, Eric Bledsoe was really in his bag about what Terry Rozier was doing to him last year. So he's going to have to get his pride out of this situation and go out there and play ball. Now, I think another thing that's big for them, Brook Lopez. He's going to have a fairly good series as well, because last year Al Horford pretty much did what he wanted against him. And that's got to be somewhat combated. You don't have to stop him, but he can't be out there doing what he wants to do on a regular.
And the flip side to that is, now that's going to pull Al Horford away from the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see where y'all he be acting now.
Exactly. So that's definitely going to be big. But I think, I think Kyrie will have a big series. But I think Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum will both be too much. Coupled together, they'll be too much for Milwaukee. And we'll be looking at another upset this year as far as the Celtics are concerned. But, man, the Celtics, what do you make of their series? Do you think that they looked good? Were there any glaring weaknesses to you as far as their series was concerned?
Who, Boston?
Yeah.
I mean, they looked good at times. I think they looked good down the stretch of games, for sure. But, I mean, it wasn't really too much you could really take from that series, considering
how much better they were.
Yeah, it was just the Pacers. That's what I was telling Devon. I'm like, because he was raving about Gordon Hayward's play.
The Oladipo-less Pacers.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't think that Gordon Hayward, I'm not going to say he's not back, but I'm just going to say that I'm not going to take this Pacers series as evidence, though. I want to see it against some better competition before I can just say, okay, Gordon Hayward finally back to getting back right in basketball and playing the right basketball that he used to play.
But well, we definitely going to see it this series because it's going to be a bunch of wings saying. Out there.
And I think that if he is back, then that would be huge for Boston because that's even another guy that Milwaukee will have to worry about because, I mean, we already know he's a decent defender. He's going to be guarding some Giannis.
Mm-hmm.
They got a lot of guys, man.
Only Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. They got a lot of wings they can throw at him.
Okay, none of them keep him away from the rim, though, but you just got to make it tough on him.
Exactly. It's a lot like what happened with LeBron last year. Like, they had to come up against LeBron as well, and they took LeBron to, what, 7 games?
Yeah.
And, I mean, those Young Bucks, they held their own, so I think that we'll see them take a page out of that book as far as having that chip on their shoulder. They're going to feel like we're going up against the MVP, so we definitely going to, I mean – I'm not going out here to stop him, but I'm going out here to show him that I'm something to be reckoned with as well. And we've already seen how Jason Tatum likes to act on the big stage, and I think we'll see more of that. I'm excited for that series. I'm very excited.
The second round period is going to be intriguing. We got a possible Nuggets and Portland Trailblazers series that I think is going to be very intriguing as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Let's talk Nuggets, man. They seem to be struggling a little bit to get up out this series. Are they going to make it? Do you see them making it out of the series with the Spurs?
Yeah, I think they will. I think it will go to 7. I think it'll go to 7. But I think that the Nuggets will win. If they don't, it would be considered a real disappointment. I don't care who's coaching the damn Spurs. You got to get the one seed all year. You got to get out of the first round. And now the way it's looking, you really should make it to the Western Conference Finals. But I think that the Trailblazers will be a tough matchup for them. But, yeah, you're right. Let's see. They might not. The Spurs been looking good. And I remember when I told people when they traded Kawhi, I said that they was going to be a fringe playoff team. They ended up making the playoffs and possibly about to win a series. It's just, I mean, that's the Popovich effect. And he got a superstar. Well, he got a star in return. So it wasn't like he just got robbed.
And not only did he get a star in return, I feel like he got a guy that that complimented LaMarcus Aldridge well. Aldridge, huh?
Who are you talking? Oh, you talking?
No, DeRozan? I'm meaning DeRozan because of the type of player that DeRozan is. I feel like LaMarcus Aldridge is that guy that likes attention. He wants to be the guy. He needs to be the guy. With Kawhi there, obviously everything was about Kawhi, whether he was playing or not. They were trying to figure out why he wasn't playing. Prior to that, he was in Portland. He had Dame Dollar down there. He was in a great situation as far as I'm concerned. Only reason why I feel like he could have left was for that. Like, he wanted to be the guy. And now he's in a situation where he's in San Antonio with a guy like DeMar DeRozan, who is a very good player, but he's not demanding any more attention than
LaMarcus
Aldridge is. So I feel like that helps him a lot. And with that, like we've already said, Pop, it is what it is. In my eyes, Popovich is the GOAT. And he's already had a history of being able to play through big guys, and that's where he thrives. Now not only does he have Aldridge to play through, he's got Portal. And like you said, like you brought up, like that's a decent compliment to a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge. And now that you don't have a Kawhi Leonard, you don't have to force running your offense through a guard or a wing. I mean, DeMar DeRozan is going he's going to go out there and do what he what you need of him. But he's not like I feel like he's a very solid player, but I don't know, he's just he like I said, he's not a superstar and he's not going to go out there and draw any attention from LaMarcus Aldridge. So LaMarcus Aldridge is comfortable to where he can he can play his game and he doesn't feel like there's that much pressure on him. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them come out and win this series either, mostly off the strength of Popovich. I think that the way that their roster is set up, it's Popovich not
– have more control.
Yeah, it's not – exactly. There's nobody out there that's necessarily demanding for Popovich to make sure they're getting their shots up or to run the offense through him. It really – this situation is – making him become more of a coach, which in any aspect, that's better for San Antonio because of how smart he is. Now, on the flip side, Denver might be in some trouble. And the reason I say that is because we talked about it. Like you said, we should be on TV somewhere, man. We need to be on some. They need to get us on the screen. We said that Denver's biggest issue was going to be the fact that they weren't going to be able to find consistent guard play. We already know what Jokic is capable of, but Jokic alone is not beating a Popovich team. The reason why the Nuggets have won the games that they won is because Jamal Murray has stepped up. Jamal Murray is going through that stage right now of inconsistency. One night he'll go out here and give you 20. Next night he'll come down here and score in single digits. It's just – they're going to have to find a way for – it doesn't have to be Jamal Murray every night. They're going to have to find a way for that backcourt to give them enough every night, whether it be him, whether it be Gary Harris, whether it be anybody else they got in their backcourt. Somebody else has to step up outside of Jokic. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't see that happening consistently. So, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Spurs pull that series out.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either, but I'm hoping that the Nuggets win. I want to see the Nuggets and Trailblazers. That'd be a good series.
I agree as well. Let's talk our poll of the week. I haven't even pulled up the results yet. Do you have the results? All right, I'm about to look them up now. But our poll of the week was it was Warriors related. We talked are the Warriors in trouble? Do you think that they're in danger of not winning a championship after losing Boogie Cousins for the remainder of the playoffs? Now, our results came back very lopsided. But before we get to the results, what's your take on it, Sam? Do you think that you guys are in trouble?
No, absolutely not. Reason being is this isn't a guy – I'm not taking nothing away from Boogie, but this isn't a guy that's been in the fold very long. So I just don't understand why people think that we would be missing him. Like, it's just like, I mean, yeah, he would be a great addition for sure.
But they've already shown what they are without him.
Period. Like, I don't understand why now all of a sudden without Boogie, the Warriors can't win a title when Boogie ain't even played a single playoff game with the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
So what is like, I don't understand it. I don't know why the poll wasn't 100%. No. Like, I wish we had some of those yes guys on here so we could see what's the reason behind that. I don't get it. Do you think that they're in trouble? Are you a yes guy?
Nah, I'm definitely not a yes guy. And crazy as it might seem, one of the yes guys was GK, who was supposed to be on the show with us. I think that the Warriors are the furthest from in trouble. I think more than anything, this is a blessing in disguise. Not to say that, like you said, Boogie wouldn't be a good addition, but with a guy like Boogie playing against a team like Houston, I feel like there's a lot more that people don't take into account with the series like that. This is a guy who's obviously, prior to his injury, was trying to show how much how capable he was of being that old guy, or how deserving he was of becoming a max guy, because that's obviously what he was looking for this summer. You come up against a team like the Rockets, it's all about scheming. And you can't I feel like a guy like Boogie, if he were to play against the Rockets, you would have to figure out how you're going to get him involved and keep him engaged in that game mentally, because we've already seen that he's a head case. We've never seen him in a situation like this, though, when he'll have to face another team who is extremely talented on paper and can give you a run for your money on the court, as we saw last year. We've never seen him in a situation to where a game is really tight against a team that good, and how he reacts to not being the guy, or how he reacts to not necessarily being one of the reasons why they're successful. I think that if Boogie were to play in that game, we could potentially have an issue to where late game situations, whether they win or lose, Boogie's not touching the ball, that could be an issue. Or him not touching the ball, period, enough, whether it be late game situations or not. We could see that issue arise because of what he's trying to prove in the playoffs. Obviously, teams could approach it to where offseason, we're not offering you max money. You were with Golden State, and we didn't quite see enough to where we feel like you're a max guy. He could have been looking at this Rockets series to be the proving point as to why I'm going to be that guy. And that, in turn, could have caused issues with guys. There's a lot of guys out there who need shots. Klay Thompson, need shots. Kevin Durant, need shots. Steph Curry, need shots. In order for the Warriors to be successful, those guys have to get their shots. Boogie, not so much. He doesn't have to get his shots in order for them to be successful. But the flip side is that Boogie wants those shots. He wants those opportunities. And I don't know. I just feel like it could have been an issue. So now that he's not there, that combats that issue. And all it does is makes it more apparent that KD, Steph, and Klay have to get their shots now. They have to. And like you said, Boogie was susceptible to that pick and roll. And now they don't have to worry about that because he's not there. Not to say that Bogut is much better than him, but now it forces you almost to play Draymond at the five a little more. Gives you that luxury of being more versatile on the court. And, I mean, obviously that's when the Warriors, to me, are at their best, when they play that small ball. So I don't think that there's a cause for panic at all. As far as our results are, it was 79% to 21%. No, winning out by a lot. And like I said, I agree completely with our no people. I think that that's as simple as that. I don't necessarily believe that the Warriors have anything to worry about. With or without Boogie, it was going to be the same exact series that they're going to see with the Rockets. It's going to be a barn burner. Simple as that. Was there anything else you wanted to add about that, about the Warriors and Boogie? I don't think there's much more that needs to be said. Simple as we put it. Before we get off NBA, let's talk NBA draft. Phoenix Suns have recently come out and said that if they were to get the number one pick and all of the options would be on the table, they would rather have Ja Morant over Zion Williamson. It's been said throughout the year, basically, I'll say leading into at least the second month of college basketball starting, Zion's been the number one pick, head and shoulders over everybody. Phoenix, like I said, they feel a little different. Do you think that, you know, it's a good decision for them? If you're in their situation, do you believe that Ja Morant is the right decision?
Yeah, I think Ja Morant's the right decision for them. I don't think that they're necessarily saying that Ja Morant is better than Zion Williamson. I think what they're saying is, we want a point guard to go with our potential star shooting guard. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're saying. And, I mean, they just drafted a center. And they just drafted – they got plenty of athletes already on that team. It's not taking nothing away from Zion. It's just they need a point guard, especially when you got to consider that you're trying to get Devin Booker to stay around. You got to at least give him a reason to think in the future. Right now, he's looking around like, ain't nothing in here I'm trying to stick around for.
Right.
So, I mean, Ja Morant might give him a little, okay, me and John might be nice in a couple of years. We could be tough. Look what De'Aaron and Buddy over there doing. I see what they doing. We could do better than that. Like I think it's more about that. I don't think they're saying that Zion's better than Ja Morant at all.
I agree 100%. I think that's exactly the standpoint that they're taking it from. And to take it a step further, like you said, Ja Morant gives them the luxury of possibly being able to keep a Devin Booker there. But on the flip side, if they don't keep Devin Booker, that gives you a valuable option to become a scoring guard now because he's already shown that he's capable of that. You go out and draft a guy like Zion, and then you lose a guy like Devin Booker, what do you have? You don't have anybody that's going to go out there and get you buckets. Now you're forced to try to build around two big guys, which in this NBA, that's not easy to do. And not only are you building around two big guys, you're building around a center, and your other big guy is a hybrid. So I feel like Zion would be, he would be a nice fit for them if they didn't draft DeAndre Ayton last year. Like if they would have went in the direction that we expected them to, and draft a guy like Luka, then now they would be extremely dangerous if they grabbed a guy like Zion and coupled him with Luka and Devin Booker. That would be a nice trio. Now you got something that you can build around. But the fact that you went and decided to get a center last year, to me, you have no choice but to go out and get a point guard. You can't get it wrong this year. Last year, you had the opportunity to get Luka, and we've seen what Luka's capable of. You also had the opportunity to get a guy like Trae Young, which we've seen he's capable of. But you decide to go in a different direction. That's not necessarily a bad thing because I think DeAndre Ayton has the potential to be very good. But we've already seen that Luka not only has the potential to be very good, he's going to be very good, barring injury. So you went from taking a surefire guy to a guy that's like, you know what? I think this guy has potential. So you didn't necessarily get it wrong last year, but this year you have to get it right. You have to. And I think that Ja Morant is that guy. Like, you have to take him. If you get that number one pick, that's who you have to take. But, I mean, who's to say they even get number one? We don't know that they will. They may. So they just better hope and pray that nobody that they don't fall to at least three. They have to get at least two. Because if somebody else happens to slide into that second pick and pick up Ja Morant, now what? Where do you go? Who do you pick? Like now you got a little bit of a dilemma because all of the other guys are wings. The other guys up top are wings, should I say?
I think you trade down.
I think that would be ideal. But you got to do it and get something extremely beneficial to you. And I'm not necessarily sure that.
Who's another point guard in this draft? Who are the guards in this draft?
They don't have many.
It's Ja Morant and who?
Who else? I want to say I don't know if that guy.
Oh, comes from Carolina.
Kobe White. Yep. That's solid, but he ain't enough to take at three.
That's the next guard.
Goodness. See, now you got to – if you're in the Suns position, you got to hope. You have to hope that you get one or two because if you don't, you're in trouble. Yeah, because I don't think that there's anything else that's going to
– I mean, Kobe White keep, go at like seven or so. You could trade down to seven or something.
That's cool, but what are you going to trade down for? Like, what are you going to get? No, I mean, like, with you trading down, you got to get something in return for that pick. Like, if you trade in the number three pick, you got to at least trade down to seven and get something else with that seven. If you just trade down for just seven by itself.
Nah, you're going to try to get, like, a veteran point guard or something.
Yeah, I mean, goodness, because this is not a point guard heavy.
It's not a good one.
Outside of Kobe White, other point guards would be Darius Garland from Vanderbilt. He's not bad, but
good player, but I mean,
I don't necessarily think that that makes you
round. Yeah,
exactly. I'm not even necessarily sure that. Well, I'll say this. I'm 100% sure that if you don't get Ja Morant, you can pretty much book that Devin Booker is out of there. I don't think that there's anything else in this draft that is going to entice him and stay. You gotta hope that he just wants to be in Phoenix, which I don't think is the case.
I guess since you know you're going to lose Devin Booker, you just say forget it and grab R.J. Barrett or Cam Reddish or somebody for your next.
That's exactly what I was about to say. I'm not even necessarily against as a Phoenix Sun fan. Like, if I'm a Phoenix Sun fan, I'm not against drafting R.J. Barrett, trading Devin Booker, because you know he's going to walk eventually, trading him and getting some stuff to put around R.J. I'm not against that. I'm not even against I think that would be your best option if you can't get Ja Morant.
Yeah.
Simple as that. But, yeah, man, that pretty much does it for the NBA. Let's talk college basketball real quick. Our Blue Devils, man, we just earned our third straight number one recruiting class. That makes it the fifth time in 6 years that we have had the number one recruiting class. We only got one championship out of all of that. Is this something that we should be hype about?
I mean, having the number one recruiting class don't really mean as much now as it used to, because mm-hmm. It used to be that recruiting class stayed around for 3-4 years. So
it used to be bringing in that recruiting class with guys who are already ready.
You bring in the number one recruiting class for 5 out of 6 years back in the 90s, you won't win 4 or 5 titles because that's going to and seniors, and they're going to be super special.
Right.
But now it's just like you on out of that number one recruiting class, you're going to lose 75% to 85% of it to the NBA draft every year. So, I mean, it's cool, but it's not like nothing to be all extra ecstatic about. Not to me. It's not. I'm kind of excited that a couple of these guys might actually be 2-year guys.
Yeah. I'm definitely excited about that. But even beyond that, I think with this recruiting class, I'm a little more excited because of the players that he grabbed. This is not a recruiting class that's loaded with star power. This is a recruiting class that I feel like really complements each other extremely well. I felt this same way, the year that we had, who was it? Marvin Bagley, Gary Trent Jr., and who else was there that year?
The freshman
class.
Trayvon Duval.
Yes, Trayvon Duval. That class. Wendell Carter. Yes, yes, yes. That class complemented each other tremendously well. That was a really good class. I feel like this class this year has the potential to be that good as far as complementing each other well. This class this year, I felt like it was cool. It kind of complemented each other well, but I felt like it was more of a they just clicked because they all were really cool and they started to play off on one another. But I feel like next year's class really has the potential to be really good because you don't have that, like I said, star power. You've got a guy in Trey Jones who decided to come back, and he's obviously going to run the show. And you got guys around him that I don't feel like are necessarily greats. I feel like they're guys that are going to be really good, and they're going to buy in the Coach K system, and Coach K is going to make them that much better. And these guys, in order to get to the next level, are going to have to prove some stuff. And I think that they will. I think that this is going to be a really good ball club. I think the surprise out of this class is going to be Matthew Hurt. mostly because I think he'll be a guy that'll stick around for a while. But I think that he's not – I don't think he'll be a starter next year, for one. So I think he'll be a lot of firepower off the bench for us. Obviously, we still got Javon Delorier coming back. Still got Marquise Bolden coming back. I think that they'll pretty much run the show outside of Vernon Carey in the post. So Matthew Hurt will be able to chill a little bit. We won't necessarily need to throw him into the fire just yet. So I think that he'll be good. But as far as this recruit class is concerned and having a number one, it's not – to me, it's nothing to be happy about. Yes, I'm glad that we got it. I'm glad that we got the guys that we did. But like I said on one of my posts, I'm going to need for these to start translating into some championships, because right now, obviously, we all believe Coach K is the GOAT, but I'm starting to feel a lot like a Kentucky fan. We bringing in all this talent, and we not doing shit with it. And I hate that.
It's only been 4 years, man.
Only?
Man. Before that, it was 5 years before we won the title. We about due for one. Yeah, I feel that. But come on, man. We spoiled. We can't act like that. Hell just won his first national title in 30 years.
Didn't he turn around and win another one too, though?
Yeah, they won two, I think.
Yeah, exactly my point. Like,
but still, I mean, I'm just saying, it's just like, it's coming. When you look at the makeup of this of next year's roster, it's going to be a great mixture of veterans, young guys, and we're bringing back a key component.
Trey I agree. Jones. That's I agree. Key.
We need but, Alex O'Connell to come back as a walking bucket. He's gotta become. And
I think he's gonna be cool, but I think Joey Baker really gonna take that step next year.
Joey Baker is coming in with a chip on his shoulder, for sure.
I'm telling you, man, it's crazy.
Jack White's gonna come back ready. He's gonna be familiar with, because it's the first time he ever played this type of role before.
Right.
This past year. So next year, he's coming in. He's going to be familiar with the type of ball that he's going to need to play. So I think he's going to be more comfortable. We need to become a better shooter. He doesn't have to be knocked down.
Just respectable.
Yeah, they got to become respectable shooters, because you see what type of backcourt they are.
I think Trey Jones will be fine.
They're going to be locked down guys, man. So I like the makeup of this team. Come on, can we not talk about this right now? It's starting to get me all hyped. We can't talk about this for a while.
Yeah, I'm pretty hyped too, man. But like I said, man, it's got to translate into some championships. And it's, man, I feel like I would have even been content if this year or last year's team made it to the Final Four and we didn't win at all. I'd be cool. But we ain't even got none of them appearances in a while, dog. Like,
but we would have been in the Final Four this year if guys could make free throws.
That's, man,
point blank, period.
That's to me there. Personally. Yes, I need Trey Jones to work with his jump shot, but I need him to become his brother from the free throw line, because in game situations, we weren't even giving the ball to our point guard last year. We were giving the ball to Cam Reddish, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but Trey Jones isn't a good free throw shooter either. So I'm going to need him to become that. And I think he'll be fine shooting the ball. I don't think his problem is that he can't shoot. I think his problem is confidence. Because we saw who was it? Who did we play right before Michigan State?
Virginia Tech.
We saw him go out there and shoot the ball. They told him, shoot the ball with confidence. He said it in his interview. They told me to go out there and shoot the ball with confidence. When I got the ball and I saw a look that I liked, take it. And I did that. And it showed. Like, he's not a guy that's not capable of shooting. He's a guy that's capable of losing his confidence extremely fast. And we just need him to learn from that, which I believe he will over the summer. I think he'll continue throughout the year to be that respectable shooter that he had been in certain games this year. But like I said, I need him to become more of a threat from the free throw line. And more than anything, I just need him to be confident. And like you said, Jordan Goldwire is definitely going to have to take a step shooting. We need him to be able to fucking catch the ball and turn and face the basket and shoot, because teams were playing off of him. He still wasn't taking shots this year. So we're going to need that. But we ain't going to talk about Duke too much. Let's talk UVA. UVA just won a championship, and they had some guys enter the draft. One guy being Cal Guy. I know we don't – you're definitely not the type to say whether it's a good idea or a bad idea for players to leave or stay. My question to you is, do you think Cal Guy could benefit from another year in college?
No. Not really. I never really feel like it's really much to benefit from another year of college, for real. If it's possible for you to go and actually get onto a roster,
there's you no do reason it
for you to come back to college. Yeah, I mean, whatever you can learn in college, you can learn in the NBA. I used to feel like if you weren't going to play, then you should come back to school. But I mean, why not go ahead and work on your game and get paid to do it instead of having to go to class and shit? You know what I'm saying? It just makes sense for you to just go ahead and go to the league whenever the opportunity presents itself. Now, if you're going to be a guaranteed second round guy, or maybe possibly not get drafted, then you don't go.
But where do you see Cal Guy fitting? Where do you think he falls?
I think he's a late first round, early second round pick. I think he probably goes somewhere between like 18 to 25, somewhere in that range right there. I mean, he's a knockdown shooter. He can handle the ball a little bit. I don't think he stays around too long. I don't think he'll be on the board too long.
Yeah, I can see him being taken. I personally don't think he benefits either from coming back to college, mostly because this is a guy who's already proven what he's capable of. He just won a national championship. Why else do you come back? You're not coming back next year. You're not going to win the player of the year next year. You already got the championship. Coming back and winning another championship is just not going to be that meaningful to you. I mean, it'll be cool, but it's not going to give you any more of a feeling that you haven't already felt before. And I don't think there's much more that you can learn from Tony Bennett at this level, or I guess at this stage of his game. Like you said, sometimes it feels like it may be better for players to go to the NBA if, you know, the things you can learn in college, you can learn in the league. I don't necessarily feel that way. I look at a guy like Marcus Smart, who decided to come back an extra year, and his game went to a completely different level. He became more of a respectable shooter in college by coming back that extra year. And nowadays, I feel like it's really easy for players to get lost in the shuffle. You come in 1 year and you get drafted, and if you don't necessarily live up to expectations, they're instantly looking next year to, you know, we could possibly draft another you. Like, you're just going to be floating around somewhere, like a Austin Rivers, for instance.
But his money's guaranteed, though. Regardless of what situation you're in, you're still getting paid.
Yeah, that's definitely always a plus, but to some people, that don't really mean much. Like, we don't know where these guys are coming from monetarily. If you're a guy that don't necessarily – you're not wanting for the money, it's like, you know, it's going to be cool for a few years and you might find yourself overseas. So I don't think this applies to him, but some players in this instance, I mean, it is what it is. But I think that it's smart for him to be coming out right now, because I don't think that there's much more that you can learn. And this is, like we already said, a class that's pretty much low as far as guards like him. Like, you got your standard wings, but you don't have too many guys that are like him in this draft class. So I feel like that definitely bodes well for him. Last topic before we get out of here. Russell Wilson became the highest paid player in the NFL. We had just talked this. Like, he literally got his he literally signed his deal the night that we recorded.
I know.
Right after we had recorded. Do you think that this is a good move for Seattle, that they made him the highest paid player in the NFL?
I mean, I never really pay much attention to that, because it always just seems like the next star with who's up for contract is the highest player, paid player. So I don't really never pay attention to that. But as far as him getting this deal, I think it was the right move for them to sign him back. You don't let a guy that a quarterback of that caliber walk, especially when you groomed him. Like, that's your guy. I mean, don't be getting with all these other guys, these other teams with these young quarterbacks, and now all of a sudden that's what you want. Don't do that, man. Just go ahead and rock out with your guy. See what you can do. Try put a defense back around him and get a running back. I don't think it would have made sense for them to go back right now.
Yeah, I think that they made the right decision in making sure that he came back, mostly because if you go out and get a young guy, you're running a risk of, for one, not knowing what this young guy is capable of. He might look good on paper. He might look good in the highlights, but NFL is completely different. You might not know what he's going to turn out to be. And then also with that, you don't know. You have a guy in Russell Wilson who has proven to be durable. He's never had any injuries that have kept him out of playing. This is a guy that you know could most likely be around for some time. He's still going to, for years to come, he's not going to take a step back. I don't think he'll take a step forward, but I don't see him taking a step back. And right where Russell Wilson is right now, obviously he's capable of leading your team to the playoffs, and he's capable of being what you need him to be. More than anything, though, I feel like this decision was done more from a fan approval deal, mostly because this is a team that has just lost basically everything. You lost a guy like Marshawn Lynch. He was definitely a fan favorite. You lost a guy like Richard Sherman, basically a fan favorite. You lost a guy in what, Cam Chancellor? Didn't Cam retire or something? Or yeah.
I don't know what he did, but I think he gone.
Yeah. Like, you basically lost everything. You lost a guy, Michael Bennett. Like, you've lost pretty much everything. So, it's like, damn. The last standing piece of this team that was really around in a championship, Earl Thomas, too. Earl Thomas is, didn't he go somewhere else?
Earl Thomas, yeah.
Yeah, free agent this year. So, you also lost him. You lost the whole Legion of Boom. You lost your running back. You can't lose your quarterback. You can't. You just can't. I feel like you have to keep this guy around. And as far as your fan base is concerned, I felt like they would have went into extreme panic if they wouldn't have had Russell Wilson. So I think that it was good from that standpoint. And props to Russ. I'm glad that he got his deal. Much deserving. I'm not necessarily sure he should be paid more than Aaron Rodgers, but hey, if that's what you got to do to keep the guy, by all means, keep your guy. So, yeah, shout out to him for that, man. Was there anything else you wanted to add before we get out of here, though?
We ain't talk about our teams.
True. I don't have that in my notes. Probably wasn't in my notes because I didn't want to talk about it. But Sam and I decided to do another draft, like how we did with our all-time teams. And our listeners picked Sam last time, and we showed that that wasn't necessarily the case once we matched them up against each other. My team came out on top.
Awesome, janky shit.
Hey, my team came out on top. Regardless of what it was, my team won the head-to-head matchup. Now Sam and I decided to do another draft. This is the 25 and under NBA draft. We decided to draft players that are 25 years old and under. Sam had the first pick, so I'm pretty sure anybody who knows their age as far as NBA is concerned, they know who he took. He decided to take Giannis first. Right after Giannis, I took Embiid. After Embiid, Sam decided to take Ben Simmons, right?
Nah, D'Angelo Russell.
D'Angelo Russell. After he took D'Angelo Russell, I took Jason Tatum. No, I took Porzingis. Was it Porzingis or Tatum?
You took Tatum.
Tatum. I took Tatum. After I took Tatum, he took Ben Simmons. After he took Ben Simmons, I took Porzingis. After I took Porzingis, Sam took Luka, which that hurt me because that was going to be my next pick. He snagged Luka. After Luka, I decided to take Devin Booker. Sam's last pick was Karl Anthony Towns. My last pick was Lonzo Ball. So, teams go as follows. Team Sam, D'Angelo Russell, Luka Doncic, Ben Simmons, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Karl Anthony Towns. Team Ish, Lonzo Ball, Devin Booker, Jason Tatum, Kristaps Porzingis, and Joel Embiid. Our fans did a lot of voting, and our fans decided to pick Team Sam once again. Team Sam, Team Sam won by a score of 76-24. Now, this particular draft, I wasn't too bent out of shape about them picking Team Sam because, I could definitely see why they picked Team Sam. Last go around, I'm like, nah, I think my team is a little better than Sam's. This go around, I can definitely see my glaring weaknesses. I think that Sam, like I said on the post, Sam lacks shooting. My team does not. My team, 2 through 5 can slap the 3. We're all.
I don't like shooting though. You just got more shooting than me.
You lack shooting. D'Angelo Russell. That you need it. D'Angelo Russell is probably your most respectable shooter. Luka? Outside of him, Luka can hit it, but I'm not.
And Karl Anthony Towns too. I got my two guards can shoot.
Karl Anthony,
I got a big that can shoot.
Karl Anthony Towns is going to be a shooter, more effective when he's guarding bigs that can't necessarily stretch out there with him and do what he does. I like my chances with Joel Embiid defending him out there. He's not just going to camp out there and shoot the three.
I'm just saying, I got shooting where you want shooting. Your guards and a big. I got two guards that can shoot, and one of my bigs can shoot. So I don't like shooting. You just got more shooting.
I think that more than anything, the glaring, not even a weakness. I guess the thing that stands out to me the most is the fact that Devin Booker would have to match up with Luka, and that to me is an extreme nightmare. Luka's pretty much going to be able to do whatever he wants when he wants. Outside of that, I pretty much like my team, man. I like the chances of Lonzo defending a D'Angelo Russell. Jason Tatum, I mean, obviously with a guy like Giannis, you can't stop Giannis. You're just going to have to try to contain him. Porzingis, I feel like he would have a pretty good chance with Ben Simmons. Obviously, we're just going to play off of that, man. And Joel Embiid, I feel like he's going to get the better hand of that Karl Anthony Towns matchup. But like I said, man, I'm not necessarily against people picking Team Sam. I might have to do another trial run with this, though, and see who comes out on top. But, yeah, go ahead. Like,
we voted. Yeah, y'all voted Sam, but my team won on the 2K both times. How about we take the sticks and play? And
I'm with that.
Last time LeBron shot way too much.
I'm 100% with that. Like we can none set that up and go to the black top and everything.
Yeah, and I bust your head wide open.
Yeah, negative. You gonna get out there? I don't know how to shoot with these niggas. I ain't never played with them before.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. I'm mad you moved to North Carolina because I'd have been busting your head open with these dynasties.
Well, like I said, online dynasty ain't nothing but a word. We both on the same system. We both got Xbox Live, so it is what it is. That stuff don't really matter. We can do the same thing away that we can do at the crib. So it is what it is. We can, like you said, we can set it up, and I'm gonna make sure that we do that and stream it for our listeners out there. But yeah, man, that pretty much does it for the episode. Was there anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah. Make sure y'all go get that that reel. By yeah, Quay, man.
Make sure y'all do that.
It was a fire EP.
EP. Make sure y'all do that. It's that's actually the song featured on our intro. So make sure y'all go get that. It's real R-E-A-L, Relentless Even After Losses by Ish Quay, I-S-H space Q-U-E. That is myself, so make sure y'all go out and get that. Stream it. It is on Apple Music, Tidal, Spotify, YouTube, all that. So anywhere you listen to music, you can find it. But yeah, man, I promise you won't be disappointed. But signing out, it's your boy Ish.
And it's your boy Sam. We appreciate y'all.
We out.